Yo, guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 11 of Unfiltered. I'm your host, Shaman V, and my co-host every week is Mr. Destiny over here. Chomping down, eating, what is it? Eating dinner or dunch or whatever's between lunch and dinner?
You know, as long as I get the calories that I need every day, it's whatever the fuck I want it to be, all right?
So how many meals are you eating now? Are you doing that 6 meals, 5 meals kind of thing?
No, I eat like three to four.
Ah, okay. Cool. And this is our show. This is going to be our first show where we actually have guests on here. And figured it'd be very, very logical or reasonable to have Mr. Gray Torp on here since a lot of NASL news was announced today, probably like about 3 hours ago. What's going on, Andre?
Nothing.
Plus, we didn't have Pro Corner, so I got to get Andre in here every week. It's like a quota. There's a quota I have to
meet. Especially on Unfiltered. Yeah. Especially on Unfiltered. I mean, this is probably your greatest one next to Wednesday Night Sprites. Actually, you always told me I was going to be on Wednesday Night Sprites.
What about climbing? You dick, man.
No.
God.
I mean, Destiny makes this best. And then, obviously, Wednesday Night Sprites is because of tempo.
Shit. Okay,
you know what would be funny? We should have one show where we just bring back... Do you remember Shaqty?
Shaqty?
Shaqty.
Oh yeah. My god, that guy.
Does he still do anything in StarCraft? Do you have any idea?
Who's Shaqty?
You know what? I actually troll the Lazura forums once in a while, and I'm just like, Jesus Christ. Okay, so me and Steven used to be on the same team. It's called Lazura. Lazurua. And that's where I was Grey Torp. And he was Destiny, Neo Destiny at the time.
Hell yeah.
And I'd always shit on Destiny, so it wasn't even like... I didn't even think he was relevant. But then he came in StarCraft 2, actually had a ridiculous amount of skill.
Yeah, no, on Brood War I was shit too. I just played EOMS games and shit, but...
No, we trained a little bit. I remember we trained...
A little bit. I barely grinded. I peaked barely at B- one season and then lost it. Like yeah. You know those kids at the end of an iCup season who, when everybody was grinding games, you would host a game, and then if somebody joined and their record was like 72 and 28, you'd ban them, and then when somebody would join and their record was like 250 and 248, you'd be like, okay, let's play. I was one of those kids at the end of the season.
That's how it was, man. That's how it was. I mean,
easy one.
I see couple of that.
Was that? Or go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, was Ayumi a real person, or did Shaqty make her
up? I don't know. I'm pretty sure everybody was fake, bro. Okay, so this is what happened, right? The guy's name is Shaqty Lazura, and we're gonna fucking do everything. We're going to build Lazura TV, and you're going to be our main spokesman. We're going to build the StarCraft channel, and you're going to be our captain. I was the captain for quite a long time. And then I switched over to Team Light, which was Zeri's team. But, he, like, so many promises. Like, we're going to do this. We're getting sponsors. There's all these really cool places that are interested in us. You just got to wait a couple more months. We got it. And, of course, he's just fucking selling me nothing. and he had this girlfriend. He lived in Japan. And he had this girlfriend. Her name was, like,
Ayumi was her online name.
Ayumi. And it's funny because Ayumi had the same exact hotkeys as Shaqty. She had the same exact APM and spoke barely any Japanese. Okay?
And this I don't think I ever heard her on mic. I never heard her on mic ever. And she was apparently from Japan, no?
Yeah. And he was living in Japan. Apparently, and I was like, oh, I would speak some Japanese to him. And he was like, oh, yeah. I'm like, what the fuck, man? And... he had this other made-up girl named Natsumi that apparently builds all the websites and manages everything, and I don't know.
This is all the same person?
Yeah, yes.
All these people are the same person. Nice.
And I found out later that freaking the kid, his IP is registered to Canada, and he's just doing everything from Canada, but he says he's living in Japan. He sleeps and wakes up on Japanese time. It's just ridiculous, man. Like, awesome. Biggest bunch of bullshit ever. Welcome to StarCraft Brood War.
Alright, let's get started.
Was there any pro gamer in the history of all of Brood War that wasn't on Team Light at one point in time?
Dude, Firebat Hero was on Team Light.
Everybody was on Team Light. I'm pretty sure like every StarCraft Brood War pro gamer at one point in time was on Zeris' team.
Yep. And just got poached.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
That. Okay. Okay. Let's get started. Before, just one quick thing that we're adding to the show. I'm having a friend of mine who's modded for a lot of my shows kind of come on and be our social media Reddit person that's going to kind of filter through all the questions. It's Henry Zhao Trio. You might have seen him in the channels. Henry, you want to hop on here real quick?
Hello. Hello.
Hey, Henry. Yeah. So what Henry's going to do is he's going to facilitate picking out all the questions that you guys write for us instead of me sitting here just like reading in this crazy awkward silence while I'm reading or I'm reading out loud, that kind of shit. So he's going to be doing that. He's going to be looking on Twitter too for any questions and include pound unfiltered in your questions on Twitter so he can find it easily. But Henry's also, or he's also a writer who's written for the esports and ESFI too. So he's definitely in the whole SCT community and knows all everything that's going on. So welcome, Henry.
Thank you, thank you. Hopefully I do an adequate job.
I'm sure you will. But, okay, let's get started. Well, we're obviously going to be starting with the WCS America topic, given that we have Greatorp. And Greatorp's just going to, I think you're going to hop off after this topic, right? Is that, like, you don't?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think you have get the hell out of here.
Yeah, so we're going to have Michael Shore on a little bit later to talk about game design. But yeah, let's talk about this. Huge news today. Looks like my topic got cut off here. Great. It should say MLG out and NASL in. There we go. But yeah, so NASL going to be doing the WCS America starting, I think, after the Challenger League for season two, right? So huge news. And I think that's pretty much been what's been dominating Reddit this afternoon. So great job. Yeah, so talk to us about it. How long have you guys known and how do you feel about it?
We've known for, let me look back in the calendar. We've known for like a month-ish that we're going to do something like this.
Okay.
It's actually like the first time we've actually all shut up at the same time. It's crazy. Because normally something gets leaked, right? Like, Chemin, normally I tell you, or something or another. But this time
now my sources have been
an hour before.
Fuck.
No, but, seriously, like, we've known for a good amount of time, but it's always that we don't want to say something and all of a sudden, like, it doesn't happen. Obviously, things are very volatile. Yeah. Anything can happen. MLG can come back and be like, no, actually, we want to do it. And all of a sudden, we're boned. So we've known it for a little bit.
That's still an option that they could do that?
Well, not anymore, of course.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so obviously one of the big things is MLG. I think MLG's announcement that they were kind of bowing out of it kind of preceded y'all's announcement. That's just right after, right? I think correct. I don't know. Did y'all plan on coming out with it today, or did y'all kind of rush it given
yes.
that?
Yes.
Okay.
It was supposed to launch at 12 p.m. PST, 3 p.m. EST, of course. But China took our jobs and now takes our announcements, man. Taking everything. Ridiculous.
Alright, so obviously you're happy about this, right? Because before, I think the outlook for NASL was just World of Tanks, and you guys all being StarCraft folks, it was, I don't know, it was almost depressing just seeing you guys having to only do World of Tanks, I mean, to be honest with you. So, yeah, talk to me about just your feelings personally on it.
I was, I didn't really have the whole story with the whole World of Tanks and not doing StarCraft. I was pretty pissed. Like, I was definitely considering leaving NASL. I was considering, just doing my own thing, going solo, just because, like, StarCraft is my true passion, and I love that. But I took a step back and realized there's more to esports than just StarCraft. I just went with it. I trusted a lot in actually the management at NASL or HLP. And, they came through really, really well, as they've always done in the past. And it's been really good. World of Tanks, I thought I was going to hate it. I thought it was a piece of shit game, honestly. Just coming into it being a StarCraft elitist. But it worked out to be a phenomenally awesome game. It's such a fun game to play. Me, Rotterdam, and Bitter actually are the dream team, if you guys want to know. We'll take on anybody. But,
Do you have to say all this, man?
Yes, yeah. I do. I'm not bullshitting you. Like, we're actually really good at it, and I like the game. Like, I play it more than StarCraft right now. And then right now, Yep. Obviously, having StarCraft again, I can't wait to get back into it and play it some more.
Is there a lot of depth to it? Do you think there's a lot of room for, like, a pro scene to grow? Not in terms of audience, just, like, do you think there's enough depth to the game?
It's incredibly deep. Like, the amount of math that you have to do, it actually resembles a lot of, like, real-time poker, like, but with different variables.
Like, what
because
math?
there's an incredible amount of RNG. Math that it takes to penetrate tanks, all of them have different armor, different spacing, different angling. It matters where you angle it, and there's like a coefficient to modify your impact and your damage and your penetration.
Right.
Not only do you have to know the numbers, but you have to see exactly where you're penetrating or you're trying to penetrate your opponent's tank. There's different ways you can like there's like auto loaders which do like 4 to 6 shots in a small amount of time, but they have long reloads. You have to kind of babysit them while being able to dish out the damage. And then speed is a big key. You know, flanking is a big key. Keeping in mind that you can only keep your turret in a single place. And then, of course, having the double blind feature with how scouting works. It's actually like scouting is 10 times harder than it can ever be in StarCraft. Just because like you have double blind, it's insane.
Okay. What do you mean by double blind? Can you explain that?
Well, I guess it's like I can't see you, but you can't see me, right? Like that's how it is in StarCraft, of course. But all of a sudden, you have camouflage coefficients that you have to keep in mind. Bushes are a factor. Hiding behind buildings, proximity, how far you can, your view range in your tank, that's going to be a huge problem. So, you know, some tanks you can't see that far because of, let's say, the particular binoculars that were made at that time, or just how close, like, you know, you can have blinders on. That's another big problem. Just how the tank was made during that time affects how well you can scout. Of course, your turn radius, going over mountains and seeing properly. Like, there's so many different things to have effective scouting runs.
Is it real-time or is it, like, turn-based?
No, it's real-time.
No, it's all real-time.
It's all real-time, yeah. Huh. It's actually much... It is much more fun to play than to watch. It's really a matter of just how much of a spectator
for now,
it is.
Chan Man. Yeah, for now. Yeah.
But okay, so enough of World of Tanks. We'll get back to World of Tanks.
Sounds really cool. Right. Fuck, I've never heard.
We'll get back to World of Tanks. Okay, everybody is dying to hear about just StarCraft and ASL. Okay, so let's talk about that. And first off, for me, let me just give you my opinion, and Steven, I'll get your opinion right after. For me, this just all makes sense. I mean, I think most of the community probably will agree that. Just given what MLG is really good at doing, and given what NASL is really good at doing, that, you know, these are the roles that they really should have had, which means, you know, MLG should continue doing their awesome tournaments that they do, and fully dedicate their time to that. And then NASL should do this type of league/studio week, you know, just daily content type of thing. So I'm really, really excited to see you guys, and having you guys have two sets of casters too, I think, you know, facilitates that. You guys have a host in Clutch, who's an amazing host too. I think you almost have the entire pieces all on staff. Kind of similar to ESL. ESL has the same thing too, right? So really, really awesome, and it's great having you guys who are StarCraft 2 people back doing StarCraft also. I think that makes the most sense too. And so I think I'm really, really excited about it. I think it's good for NA esports in general, or StarCraft esports, given that NASL's back in the mix again, you know, big player in the mix again. And MLG is going to be just as big, you know, just with their tournaments and being probably first, you know, tier one type of tournaments. Steven, what do you think?
Sounds good. I agree with everything.
Oh, come on.
Well, fuck, you said everything. Damn. I mean, NASL is obviously more suited to this style of tournaments, just in what we've seen so far of what MLG has done and what NASL put together in the past. Did you read Total Biscuit's comment on...
Yeah, I read it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much of that is true or not, but from what he made it sound like, MLG was not enjoying this endeavor at all. They're having a lot of trouble with it. It was, like, horribly a big loss for them in terms of running the event. They didn't get as much support from Blizzard as they wanted, blah, 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 whatever that. So I mean, I don't think there's a single person in the universe that thinks that this moving off of MLG is a bad thing. I mean, having two competing organizations is good so that we don't get anybody being lazy. Not that anybody would ever do that, of course. Not that we've had infinite amounts of problems with WCS, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I mean, I think that everybody agrees that it's a good thing. It's not...
I mean, we're built on...
Oh, shoot, sorry, I was muted for a second. Sorry, guys. So, question is what, Andre, what do you think are some things that you're going to bring to the table that we haven't seen yet in WCS NA or America?
Okay, so I mean, I don't want to take anything from MLG, because I know the position that they were put in, to an extent, I know their position... It wasn't the nicest position ever for them. I think there were a lot of organizational things that just happened that were really unfortunate for all parties. It's not just, you know, I don't want to blame it on any single person. And really, it's really hard to assess the blame, but I'm not going to go into that anymore.
Yep.
I think because we have a much larger staff that has worked on an online broadcast for much longer, I think not only is our organizational flow going to be 10 times better, but also we have a production crew that's solely meant for pushing out stuff for the players, right? Like, we're going to be able to get the storylines together and make it a lot more transparent to the viewers why these players should be in this league, what was their journey, et cetera, et cetera. So just basically marketing the players. I think that's the number one thing that NASL has always prided itself on. Just being able to tell the stories, being able to highlight and showcase the skill that comes to whatever tournament that we do. I mean, yeah, we did that with even DreamHack. I mean, that's a perfect example. DreamHack, right? We're just doing community casting. Not the last one, but the one before that. We stayed up until ungodly hours, right? We started work at 10 p.m. We had on-the-fly replay, instant replay. And on top of that, like the stuff that wasn't casted that we weren't casting, we're following the other casts and then recording it, editing it, and then doing small little recaps in between those broadcasts. That's a ridiculous amount of support, not only from our editors, but, you know, me, Frodan, we actually edit a ton in NASL. We do a lot, whether it be World of Tanks, whether it be StarCraft. We take a lot of time to learn, you know, Final Cut Pro and Adobe Premiere, just so that we can facilitate that a little bit faster, because we know it's very time sensitive. So that's why we've like built into a well-oiled machine that can do these online tournaments.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that the production team and just all of you guys together, Elliot in particular, I mean, all of them are top-notch in our industry right now. And yeah, it's going to be amazing to see what kind of things that you guys do, even from the standpoint of B-rolls and fillers in between. I mean, I'm really, really excited to see how you guys improve it. But, you know, one thing that comes up, though, is that you guys are still doing the, you know, the WGL NA, right, at the same time as you're going to be doing all this. So how are you guys going to be able to do that, given just one production team?
Okay, so it is going to be very challenging. We have Wednesday to Sunday that we know we're doing for World of Tanks. That leaves us with kind of limited time for StarCraft. Now, I can tell you that we are looking to accommodate WCS as one of our highest priorities. Obviously, we want to be doing StarCraft. We built our brand on StarCraft, so we're not gonna go half-ass into it and just, you know, fuck it up. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, everybody's shitting on MLG, and then everybody shits on NASL. That's going to be the worst possible thing, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to allocate a ton of resources. That probably is going to mean that most of the casters and the editors will be working 6 to 7 days a week while we get more people to help out. I know we are in talks of getting hopefully probably additional casters, whether it be for World of Tanks or for StarCraft. I'm not sure yet, but definitely going to happen. And I can just tell you that it sucks, because the whole team, there's not a single person on our team. Rotterdam, Bitter, me, Frodan, Clutch, and, well, Rootkill, but he's a World of Tanks caster. But the five of us, we want to be casting both games. That is for sure. Like, we all love both games. It's just how can we properly allocate it? And we're probably going to do like swing shifts. Like, you know, some people work Monday to Friday, and then some people go Wednesday to Sunday. And then like Monday, Tuesday, or that Saturday, Sunday, we're going to try to fit in a little bit of like, you know, recaps and stuff like that, because we need to do B-roll. We need to push out as much content as possible.
So are you guys going to have to work? Are you individually going to have to work more, or each one of you guys? Or
I hope so. Shit, man. We are all okay. I shouldn't say we are all blah, blah, blah.
More hours.
I am. I want to work. Like, you don't understand how fucking infuriating it was to be sitting on my hands for so long, not doing any StarCraft, not doing any World of Tanks, not doing anything. We were just going into the freaking studio, playing games, learning World of Tanks, learning more StarCraft, of course, and we were just waiting. Of course, we're learning Dota as well. We're just anticipating some sort of thing. So we want to work. We're waiting to put in, we don't even care, 60 hours a week, 80 hours a week. As long as we don't get burned out, we want to be doing this shit. So I fully am committed to working my ass off as soon as this pops up, and we have to be doing both leagues. And I don't know for sure about the other guys, but can already tell you that Ben's in there 50 to 60 hours a week. Frodan is also in there 50 to 60 hours a week. Rotterdam is being very active. He's going home to do Home Story Cup. He's been doing StarCraft II tournaments outside, one up in San Fran. He's ready to work. Clutch has been dying to be under a microphone to get out there. So I don't think you have any sort of unwillingness to put in extra time.
Can I ask a few questions?
Yeah, go for it, man. Anytime, just jump in, Theo, whenever you want.
Well, I don't want to just, like, override you. Dude, hey, no, so I'm just curious, what I've never actually looked before, what is, like, the World of Tank audience versus the StarCraft 2 audience? Like, what kind of viewership do you get on tournaments that you cast for them?
So far, it's been a lot lower, but we've only done qualifiers so far. This has just been qualifiers for the regular season. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because the demographics are a little bit older, actually a lot of bit older. You're looking like 20 to 40, and we have actually a lot of older people that have jobs. So when we did Wednesday to Friday, we would get like 2, 3, 4K, something like that. So it was okay. It's not bad. But on the weekends, it dropped off considerably, maybe 1,000 or something, 5 to 1,000.
I'm just curious, is why move in that direction rather than a more traditional direction, like whether it's League of Legends or Dota 2? What drove you guys to World of Tanks? I'm just curious.
Well, it's the support. The support that Wargaming has given is unbelievable. They're so transparent in what they want to accomplish. And on top of that, they're ready and willing to really shell out investment into us to make one of those tournaments. And I can tell you, it's gone really well. They're really happy with everything. And when it comes down to it, it's just, you know, other tournaments, they're fine with just having everybody, you know, if you want, like DreamHack, if you want to do a StarCraft 2 tournament, go for it. Whereas Wargaming will say, hey, I want you to put on this this tournament with this type of production value. Make it happen.
And so you guys, so it's kind of like the Warg people are Riot, and you're like LCS in a way, like you're kind of the tournament that they envision, and they're investing in that, like that kind of a scene.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I would say we're more like WCS actually. It's
or WCS, pretty sure.
Equal, but I mean, we are white lips.
No, I'm just kidding.
We are white lips, right? It's like we are Wargaming. It is a Wargaming production. That's how it works out too.
Yeah,
and I'm really happy to be. I mean, I know I've been sucking their dick pretty hard, but I'm really, really happy to be at Wargaming.
Another question that I noticed coming from the audience a lot is, I know that you guys did live events for NASL. Do you see yourself doing any kind of live events for WCS, or do you think you even have the ability to? What with the investment in the tank game going up?
I honestly don't know what has been said and what hasn't been said about live events, but I would assume that we are going to go into a little bit of that. I would love to. They might have been pitching it or something. I kind of stay away from all that stuff in the front, but I think maybe a 50% chance that we'll be doing it. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some sort of event at the end of WCS and NASL guys are doing that.
Got it.
Yeah, that was one thing when Elliot was on too. He was talking about how it's just such a different beast in itself, the live event. Versus anything you guys do.
Way more money and a whole different fall game in terms of setting up the production and everything, too.
Yep.
What, just curious, why is it that none of you guys from this kind of sounds like a weird question. Is it, like, in really bad taste for you guys to try to cast any, like, MLG games? Like, I know, like, they're open to community casts and whatnot. I don't know. What's your guys' like, relationship with MLG? Is it kind of rocky? Is it indifferent? Is it good? Or how would you describe it?
I would say it's pretty good.
It's pretty good? Did you guys ever enter any applications or whatever to try to cast for any MLG games, even if it's just, like, a guest casting thing or, like, a stream thing? Or?
Bitterdam probably have. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe, like, it's an informal, hey, let me cast this type of deal. But for the most part, I don't think there has been much of that. I mean, we respect MLG. We let them do their stuff. We know, you know, they have very powerful figures that come to them. Day 9, obviously, Husky and Turtle Biscuit. But we let them do their own thing. And, we try to accommodate them as much as possible. Yeah. I can say, with the Pulse, they've been super accommodating. Like, if we ask for anything, they're like, yeah, we'll get that to you, et cetera, et cetera. So they've been awesome.
I mean, that's one of the things. I know this Anaheim, right, they're only going to have one stream. So are they doing community streams or not?
For Anaheim, they are, yeah.
Yeah, they are. Okay, so that's actually really good. So
The last question I had then was, I know that a lot of people have been asked this too. What about the IPL crew? Have you guys ever considered dipping into any of that if you need to expand your own production team or whatever? I know that there are some casters is Cats Pajamas doing anything right now?
No, they're just all like, Blizzard, dude. What are you talking about? Blizzard,
are they?
Blizzard nabbed them all up, dude.
Wait, so the IPL crew's been working with MLG?
Oh my... No. They're part of Blizzard proper. They work at Blizzard.
What do they do?
Oh my god, where the fuck have you been?
They don't work on WCS. What do they do with
Blizzard? They do. They work on the portal and they work on the media that comes in. There's like that whole YouTube show recap of WCS that they
do. Their whole like production crew and everything? Were they just renting it out or what? For like all of their live tournaments and shit for their Vegas event and whatnot?
No, IPL is just gone. But Blizzard picked up a lot of their team. Like, David Ting's there now. He's, like, head of media, or I forget what it is, actually. But David Ting's there. Kevin's there. Kevin Naki's there. A lot of their staff.
What does Kevin do there?
I forget his title. He's head of some type of media.
Okay, so fuck you. So, obviously, it wasn't that obvious, because I haven't seen shit.
Oh, my God. You're crazy.
Destiny. He's the manager of online broadcasting.
There you go, online broadcasting, yeah.
What does he do for online... I haven't seen him online broadcast. Do I just miss
He's making content for Blizzard. They're making content like Kevin has an arcade, YouTube arcade series that, you know, that talks about just the SE2 arcade, and they're doing WCS, like, videos here and there, too. And the portal just came up. I'm sure they had a big part in the portal, too, for WCS.
Here, I'm linking. Go.
Oh, shit.
Look at that. Real quick. Okay. Jesus Christ, Destiny.
Dude, Steven, man. Yeah.
Man, how am I supposed...
This happened a long time ago, man.
This doesn't even have 2,000 views on it. How am I supposed to know about shit like this?
Jeez.
What the
fuck? Well, the other ones have a lot more. There's 5,771 on this one.
Wow.
Yeah,
You linked it in the stream chat, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't.
So the real question is, are you going to poach IPL from Blizzard then? That's like your next...
No, they're going to work completely separately.
Okay.
Like,
yeah, no, okay, all
right.
All
right, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, even think like what we can say. We can say like, oh, Blizzard done goofed, or we can say Blizzard, you did a great job, but they can only say Blizzard, you did a great job, because they are Blizzard. Like, they're going to come at everything from a different angle. And
are you trying to say that they're not unfiltered, like we are?
I mean, all of us are going to be filtered.
I'm just kidding. Right.
of course. But okay, yeah. Again, it's like from the standpoint of... So you guys are just going to take different shifts. So it's not going to be like two of you guys are going to do Premier and the two of you guys are going to do Challenger, or...?
That was just like... I'm throwing it out there. I don't actually know exactly how we're going to schedule things. Okay. It could be we all come in 7 days a week. We sleep at the office, and we just freaking go. I mean, it's happened before, basically.
Right.
But
so you brought up the Pulse. You brought up the Pulse.
Yeah.
What's the status on the Pulse, given that you guys are going to be doing SE2 again? Does it change at all? Or
we want to keep doing the Pulse, but I think for now we're committing all of our resources in terms of editing to the upcoming WCS. So the Pulse will probably take a backseat right now. but we do not plan on discontinuing that. Like, we want to keep it going. So okay. Expect the Pulse, just maybe not even in 2013. I don't know. Maybe not for this quarter.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, fair enough.
Will we see more orb casting for the NASL?
Did Orb ever cast for you guys?
Yes, he did.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. you know, Orb is a great friend of mine. We started up StarCraft together, StarCraft Brood War together. But man, like, I've known about his rage problem, and back then I was like, dude, you really shouldn't say that shit, because it's gonna come back to bite you in the future. And
sure did. Definitely did. Oh, that's sure. crazy. But okay, any other questions you guys have, or Andre, any other announcements or things that we haven't covered maybe that you want to address?
I can't think of anything in particular right now.
Are you announcing me as a guest caster on the show, or are we saving them for the Reddit thread later?
Well, you kind of ruined it now.
Oh, shit. Sorry, never mind.
Henry, any questions that people are asking about WCS and ASL?
Okay, so I have two things which people are asking. Okay. One of them is this is from Dustin on Twitter. He goes, how do people support NASL besides just waiting and watching for it?
That's going to be the best way. I mean, follow us on Twitter and Facebook, all that social media stuff, NASL TV for all that stuff. We've kind of moved away from the subscription model. So, big important thing, if you did subscribe for NASL Season 5, please email us, because we will give you a full refund for that. But yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. I mean, that's really the best amount of support. And if you have any skills that we can use, we would love to have you. Jobs at NASL.tv, just email us there and tell us a little bit about yourself, so we can, you know, obviously expand, because we're looking to do that.
Yeah, what particular jobs are you looking for right now?
I know we're looking for editors, and I know we're looking for, like, management people and stuff like that. Probably casters for a little bit, but maybe not. I'm not sure. We might have some people in mind. And coders. We definitely need coders. If you guys
always need good coders.
I know. You can never get enough. So, Chris, if you want a very high-paying job,
are you sure
esports
you can
isn't
afford
the best way to go?
You sure you can afford me?
I can definitely afford you, Chris.
Okay.
Damn.
Henry, you said two, right? Is there another one?
Yeah. And one more is, what do you guys think about Turtlebiscuit confirming a second season of America?
Well, he never... See, that's the thing. Like, they never said they weren't going to do Shoutcraft.
Heavily insinuated at the end of the last one that it was a huge failure and he wasn't doing it anymore.
No, he did not.
I definitely remember that. Yeah, it was like, we didn't make any money and fuck this shit. And why would we do this shit? Because I hate everybody. I remember that, right? Maybe not exactly in those words, but... More or less, he was like, the future of Shoutcraft is incredibly uncertain because these numbers suck. We did everything we could to get the event out, because some people were complaining, like, we couldn't find the event. And he was like, well, fuck, we did, like, all these things to give you notice that it was turning on, and you didn't. And I thought that... Oh, yeah, was it Jenna that came out and said there wasn't going to be another? It was pretty much confirmed that there wasn't going to be another one. Like,
No. So the official statement was that Shoutcraft America was not going to exist as it was. Like... You know, this in the state at Correct. Which it was presented. They never said they were not going to do it. In fact, I think Turtlebiscuit insinuated that they would eventually, you know, most likely do another one. It's just, again, they had to fix like this list of issues that he cited, right, before they would, you know, do another one. So it sounds like maybe he's fixed those issues, and that's great news. I mean, Shoutcraft America is really important, I think, to growing our scene here, and continuing just the interest that we kind of built up with the first one and with WCS America right now. So this is all good news. I mean, a lot of the today was really, really good for
StarCraft.
SC2 in America. So good stuff. But all right, Andre, man, appreciate
Thanks,
you coming
guys.
On, man. Hopefully a lot of you guys. Oh, wait, actually, is there any other questions, Henry, before I let him go?
Can I ask a question?
Go for
Hell
it.
Hell yeah. What do you guys, in terms of NASL, does your money all come through, like, venture capital? Or, what are your sponsors? Like, when I think of MLG, I instantly think of, like, Dr. Pepper and, I don't remember anything in terms of NASL for that. I know that a lot of people ask a lot of questions because it seemed kind of weird that you guys had so much money behind you, but nobody really knew where it was coming from. I'm not trying to get, like, a conspiracy thing open, but...
What? Azo, Epson, Kingston, HyperX...
Got it. Okay.
Beyond the Summit, all that stuff. Yeah, don't get me wrong. We had to start out with the venture capitalist. A lot of it was actually Russ, investing into the equipment and stuff. And he really put his neck out there, and he could have easily gotten it chopped off. But he swam at the end of the day, and he did a really good job. It's just been, sponsors, of course, a little bit of venture capital, but mostly, that kind of stuff. Just trying to be as solvent as possible. That's really what we've been looking for the whole time. We're not looking to be lost leaders. We're looking to be stable and consistent in the scene, and I think we've proved that.
Got it.
So last question.
Oh, shoot.
I got one. Oh.
Somebody in chat said, who is Mike Morhaime, and what was his roles in the problems with WCS? I don't even know the name.
Morhaime, CEO of Blizzard.
Oh. Well, what does that have to do with anything? Okay, never mind. Let's get that. Okay. Go ahead, next.
Obviously there are pictures and stuff of the remodeling of the studio, and I always figured out that the remodeling had a lot to do with World of Tanks. So, was that true, or is there going to be another remodeling in the future here, or?
I'm not sure. I know the set is highly customizable now. We went into it thinking, hey, let's make sure we can make it World of Tanks, but if it comes to, Candy Crush or whatever it is, we can change it to fit that type of model. We've made it customizable, and I think we'll be able to fit in the StarCraft in a non-tanks type of theme.
I mean, it wasn't really that StarCraft themed before. I mean, it was mostly just whatever you guys had on the screens, on the displays, right? I mean, that was...
Are you talking about, the same, studio that they do, the YouTube content from?
Well, the Honeycomb stuff, right?
Yeah, it wasn't that StarCraft-themed, was it? I mean, at least I didn't think of it that way. But
it was a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate you hopping on and answering these questions for us. And, we kind of getting a chance to speak about it first, before all the other shows get a chance to talk about. So I'm really, really glad that you were able to come on here.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and start talking about game design and might bring up a little Reddit conversation Steven and Mr. Rocket had concerning DayZ. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Oh, man.
Oh, shit.
All right, guys, we're back. We're back. And we are like
that
to welcome
the,
our guest.
The most fucking, like, assassin Jason Bourne picture. He looks like he's about to kill somebody. You couldn't find a picture of him smiling?
I was drinking on my porch. Like, I was totally happy. Totally happy.
You're drinking on your porch? God. Dude, it's a cool picture, man. Stylized, got the shadow in the back and shit.
It looks like Jan did his tie a little bit because he needed to take some deep breaths after, like, beating the shit out of somebody. Jesus, man.
Oh, wait. No, that's a different picture. Oh, I see. That's that was my birthday. It was my wife took me out for James Bond drinks.
Oh, okay. Shit.
All right. Okay,
for those who don't know who Michael Shore is, he is the lead game designer for Euphoria. I mean, on the offensive combat game.
Yep.
For Euphoria, who's a game studio. But we wanted to bring Michael on here for a couple reasons, to talk about game design, which we'll get to in a second, but also to address any questions that Steven might have in regards to his his Reddit conversation that he had with Rocket, who is the designer for DayZ. And why don't you explain a little bit so that you can explain to Mike too what's going on.
Sure thing. Okay, so a mod exists called DayZ. Most of us have heard of it. There's a game out by Bohemia called Arma 2, and what DayZ does is it takes Arma 2, it throws you in one of the Arma 2 maps, Chernarus, and it adds a whole bunch of zombies, and it's got like this sandbox MMO-ish feel kind of going on, where you've got like one account that's synchronized through all of the Hive servers. It's like a survival-based sandbox. There's no like end game, or like you don't win or anything. And more or less, it sounds like it's kind of a bad description, but more or less, that's what DayZ is. It's just a sandbox, open world, do whatever you want kind of thing with no real end game in mind. It was insanely popular. It got pretty popular, maybe 6 months to 8 months ago. A lot of people on the internet were talking about it. The game itself was growing quite large. A lot of people were getting servers. There were a lot of people making spin-offs of DayZ, which is interesting in and of itself. Mods of an alpha mod, you know? There's DayZ Origins, there's DayZ Breaking Point. There are probably more that I can't even think of. But eventually it got to the point to where Rocket and his team felt like they were too restricted by the Arma 2 engine, and even the Arma 3 engine, such that they wanted to go their own route and design their own game from the ground up, called DayZ Standalone. And the idea was to shift more commands from the client to the server, to prevent things like hacking, to smooth out a lot of gameplay, you know, so that the server would take care of more things like calculating zombies, and it would help with like managing the AI and having multiple AIs present for zombie pathfinding and whatnot. And all of these things, basically there's this whole plethora of reasons why Rocket felt like moving to their own separate engine would be better. So 9 months ago, they announced the standalone, that they were going to be working on that. And I don't even know. Originally, like, they kept giving timelines, like, we're going to have something out by this, by this, by this. And eventually there's, like, this kick-you-in-the-ass ultimatum that came out. Like, we're definitely going to have something by December. And I remember Rocket saying, we need to set this guideline so that we can definitely get something out. And eventually December comes and passes, and he's like, well, we decided that we were going to rebuild more stuff from the ground up, so it's going to take a little bit longer. And now we're in June, and we haven't... Now, and originally, well, not originally, now in June, he said it was going to be out within the next 2 months, or he said it was going to be within the next, like, weeks after E3, but then after E3, he's saying now it's going to be within the next 2 months, so nobody really knows. Nobody really knows much of anything about the game. So the biggest point of contention, or the issue that a lot of people have, are that they've been doing kind of, like, dev vlogs talking about the progress they've made, and finally, at least for me personally, a lot of it kind of came to its head at this E3 demo. And at E3, they brought a playable build of the game to kind of show off to everybody. And I know that I was really excited because I wanted to see how the game looked at E3 now. I was really interested, not graphically at all, but just to see if they were able to smooth out the gameplay and take care of the glitchiness. And if you watch the E3 video, you notice things like the zombies still, like, run through your body, they attack you way before they ever hit you, the zombies were still, like, glitching through, like, walls and stuff, and, like, and So basically, it kind of looked like, I think the way that I phrased it in my post, maybe a little bit rudely, I was really nice in that post, though, is that I thought that it kind of looked like just a reskin of the DayZ mod. Like, they took the DayZ mod, they gave it a whole bunch of new graphics, they changed the assets or whatever for the characters, and then that was kind of it. Because it seemed like all of the sluggishness that was inherent to Arma 2 kind of still existed. And after 9 months of them working on the mod, I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't have a little bit more to show for it in terms of just, like, fixing some of the basic problems with, like, the zombies glitching through walls. So that post that I made on the DayZ subreddit was more or less, like, I don't understand what the point of the E3 thing was, because really all they had to show was, like, a reskinned Arma 2. Or a reskinned DayZ. And eventually Rocket came in and said, well, that's not true. Most of the work went into the server client architecture, but what we brought to E3 was a single player game. So some of the reasons why it was messed up was because they were running a single player build, and a lot of things had been moved onto the server, you know? So this particular program was running the client and server command, so maybe that's why it was messed up. And then in the nicest way possible, like, I was asking, like, is it possible to bring, like, two boxes to E3 to set up, like, a server and a client on the spot? And well, it was nice because I was really nice. Yeah, I was nice in my post. Yeah, it was really, yeah. And I like legitimately said, like, maybe there's something I don't understand. Is there a reason why you can't do that? And then eventually his next post was, you're acting retarded. I hate E3. I'm just waiting for it to die as a conference. Like, literally, this is what he said. And he said he wasn't going to take any time away from his development to ever put anything at all into anything having to do with E3 because he hated it as an institution. And
what? That's what he said.
Read the second
that?
Post.
Oh my god.
It's on your screen. Look, read. Hold on, right
he
there.
He never
says
it's a terrible institution.
Read up. So right there. I don't give a fuck about E3 as a conference, and I don't give care for diverting resources towards supporting it. It's an expo that's going to die, and I couldn't care less.
Okay, I didn't remember that part. Okay, you're right.
So I guess, like, the main, it just seems strange that after, like, not, I understand that when it comes to game development, it's very rare that you'll start completely over. Like, usually some kind of work is based on an earlier engine or a revamp of something else. But it just seems weird that the whole, like, the graphics and the engine for controlling the character and all of that stuff is taken care of on, it's a rebuild of, like, attack on helicopters. And then, like, the whole client-server thing that they're doing is based on, like, an MMO engine. It just seems weird that after 9 months that they would bring that to E3, you know? That was, like, my main, like, I didn't understand that. And Rocket didn't really help me in understanding that because he pretty much just said E3 sucks and called me retarded.
Well, I might be able to enlighten you a little bit.
Yeah.
Going from a client-side architecture to a server-based architecture is not an easy feat, especially when you've already decided in the first place to, oh, we're going to go with a new engine. So being able to ramp up on a new engine, transfer all your architecture to a server, and then at that point, you know, start working back in some of your core mechanics in 9 months. Like, I don't know what the size of their team is, but if you
it's relatively small from what I've
heard. Yeah, so they've got very limited resources, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, and then you talk about going to E3 and maybe most teams prep for at least 6 weeks to 2 months for E3. So if you dedicate even a third of your team and it's only 10 people, like, you're seriously slowing down your dev time. So it makes sense that they might not have debuted at or shown at E3 with a more polished product. That's pure speculation, though.
Sure, and I mean, that seems to jive well with what Rocket said. As somebody who does, like, lead development on a game yourself, would you take something like that to E3? Or I just don't understand. It seemed like that because they were always doing, like, development blogs and whatnot. It just seems like it would only make your end product look worse to take something that kind of alpha-ish that didn't even show off the work that you've done so far to E3. That was, like, a weird thing too that I didn't understand.
I don't know. I don't know exactly the context. You know, maybe they were at E3 because they wanted to meet with some people that were going to help them invest in the game and you know, get a bigger team. You know, going alpha and going public worked for Minecraft. Maybe this was this is an offshoot of that strategy, and maybe it backfired. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why someone might come to E3 with a product that maybe wasn't necessarily public ready. From what you just read to me, it sounds like, you know, perhaps that he doesn't seem to care much about E3, so maybe he wouldn't set the bar very high. I don't know. I really don't know. But from a dev, you know, perspective, it seems that there's a lot of things that you could run into that would make your E3 plans go awry quite easily.
Yeah, and especially with like a lot of the problems that you pointed out, Stephen, which were very core problems that I think a lot of people had with DayZ. Not having those things probably improved is probably a questionable decision to show anything. I mean, because there are definitely scenarios, Michael, right, where you just don't show anything.
Certainly, unless, you know, like I said, I don't understand exactly the context that they went to E3. If they had an agreement and they paid someone or someone paid them and they had to show no matter what, like, they show no matter what. Granted, that seems like an edge case, totally possible.
I think Rocket actually said that he was under obligation from Bohemia to attend E3.
Oh,
sure.
At some point, yeah.
So I can see that, and you know, E3, at least in my perspective, has always been more about console games than PC games. Mm-hmm. So you know, I can see sort of a mentality where, because of that, the nature of E3, you might just be like, well, you know, I'm under obligation. Like, let's just do this. Maybe something can come out of it, and you know, I can talk to people about the game, explain the shortcomings, and but you know, I bet you a lot of the progress they made and a lot of the things that were really good about that build weren't player facing.
Yeah.
And maybe
I don't know if it's something where like devs are scared to share that with the audience because they feel like maybe the average person wouldn't get it. But I thought that, like, it would have been really cool for me to just see, like, even if it wasn't gameplay footage, but if it was just a comparison between, like, two machines running through a city, one running the old build and one running with mainly, like, the server-based architecture, to show, like, the difference in impact between, like, how both clients run. Like, on one build, you can see, like, well, look at all of the offloading that's been done to the server so that there's not as much of an impact on the machine. Like, I feel like showing off something like that would have been so much more, just because then we could actually, it would be a little bit more tangible to see, like, the amount of work that had gone into offloading all of that to the server. Over the past 9 months, sure. Now.
That's such a technical thing, though. I mean, that's not what people like to see at these shows, right?
But if you look at it, like, DayZ is such a non-normal game. Like, it's such an abnormal game. And I feel like one of the biggest complaints with DayZ, like, for me personally, like, I have a 3930K and a GTX 780, and I get 20 FPS when running through cities on certain servers, you know? So it's like, for them to show something that can in any tangible way, like even if it's something as dumb as look at the average FPS this guy gets running through the city on the old single player build and look at what he gets now running through on the client server build because of how much more efficient it is with everything offloaded on the server. I feel like something like that would have showed off the work a lot more, even if a lot of people found it boring, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just like if it wasn't ready and I kind of knew what concerns that a lot of people had, I would have just came with a video, you know, and just showed that kind of thing. Because again, if you're going to show a product that it's going to have a lot of the fundamental issues that a lot of people have had complaints about, you kind of know what you're going to get, and it's not going to be positive. So, what I've seen in the past, a lot of people do the same thing. They just come with some type of media that they pre-made, right? They're able to fix stuff themselves and just kind of get away with that. So, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you know better than me, Steven. So. You can talk all about it. All right. Anything else on that topic, Steven?
No, not for me.
Yeah, no, I think it's it.
Okay, cool. So why don't we move on to just more of a general open discussion that I figured would be great to have Michael on. Again, for those of you who don't know or aren't familiar with the game, Michael, like kind of heads up, it's Offensive Combat, or I don't know. Actually, how do you actually pronounce the name, Michael? Is it Offensive Combat or is it Offensive?
Either one. Offensive Combat.
Offensive
Combat, you know.
Okay. You can check it out at offensivecombat.com, I believe, right? The site.
Yep.
And it's a first-person shooter. It's a Unity game that you can play on your web browser, kind of like Quake these days. And Offensive Combat's had a lot of success in the Facebook realm. And the whole kind of social, the kind of social media, or social gaming, right, and having the whole viral effect of that. So we kind of went into that with the climbing the ladder. So if you guys want to want to watch that VOD, go ahead and go to my YouTube and catch that VOD. But the whole point of this topic on this show was to talk about just game design and what we think characteristics of a good game is. And we'll kind of get to the discussion of what's a good game versus a successful game, and are those things synonymous with each other all the time? And if not, then you know, kind of what are our opinions on those things? So let's just start off with just more of a generalized discussion about good game, just game design. What are attributes of a good game for you guys? Anybody, just jump in.
Go for it.
One of the biggest things for me is really polished mechanics and controls. Like I think you can have a really simple idea, and if you polish it and you make it responsive, and the controls make sense, and they're not too sensitive but not too insensitive or unsensitive, you know, you've got a great start.
Okay, I mean, so in the standpoint of the number of kind of controls, or the number of, like, let's just say buttons that you're required to use, like, for instance, your game, right?
I mean, polished controls in the sense of, like, when I push the joystick here, or when I move the mouse, is it smooth? When I jump, does it feel like the player is actually jumping, or does it feel really stiff? Like, all these little mechanics that often get overlooked, you know, you can easily spend weeks and weeks on polishing and getting it right. You know, you look at Quake 3 or Quake Live, and like all those mechanics are uber dialed. Like you can't fault those in any way, shape, or form. And the way they mix with the rest of the game design, you know, the weapon balance and all these things, like, just creates for this perfect game. So in my mind, Gears of War, the console game, like, those controls were awesome and they were perfect. Right. And I think had they not been awesome and perfect, that cover to cover combat would have been really, really a hard sell. A really hard sell.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's
Can
right.
I ask you, I have a really interesting question for you, because I see a lot of people, especially in FPS development, get angry about it sometimes. How do you feel about things like, I've heard that a lot of developers talk about, when it comes to programming, the mechanics of how you move in an FPS, they feel incredibly limited because of the popularity of Call of Duty. And they talk about how anytime they try to implement anything outside of that really, like, specific, super fast action of Call of Duty, that players start to rage at the controls, because everybody's kind of been, I don't want to say programmed, but everybody's kind of gotten accustomed to this instantaneous response, this super fast movement, the quick reload and everything. How do you feel about that? I'm just curious.
About people responding to slower gameplay?
Yeah, about how everybody expects their character to be, I don't want to say inhuman, but like, if you play Call of Duty, it's a really good example of a game whose controls are instantly, very responsive, like what you're talking about in terms of, like, you can feel it, like, you just know when you're playing a Call of Duty, or like Quake, like, you know when you're playing a Quake.
Yeah.
And I've heard complaints, I don't remember the game, it was called, like, Red Baron or something, and the game developer was talking about how, when it comes to designing anything that falls outside of that very unique paradigm of instantaneous, like, responsiveness, where, like, it may take a little bit longer for your character, say, Red Orchestra, maybe? Where the guy was talking about, like, say, like, for sighting your gun, to, like, bring your gun up and look down the sights, like, he was talking about, like, if it wasn't done, like, almost instantly, like, people would get angry or upset, and they would say that the controls are really bad because they're so used to that Call of Duty in terms of, like, instant action and whatnot. Do you have any kind of opinion on that, or...?
I think it really depends on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to recreate a more realistic experience where someone doesn't bring their gun up instantaneously or in a tenth of a second or whatever, like, and that works for your game, then you know, you're kind of going against player expectations because of the popularity of Call of Duty.
Got it.
To me, like, every game, like, the bigger challenge for me is, like, how do I make that fun? Like, and how do I communicate that to the player? Like, hey, by the way, we're not as fast as Call of Duty, and I'm teaching you that by these other mechanics that help you with that, or that force you to pay attention to that and adapt to it. So, you know, you can make it, if you if you did nothing to Call of Duty but only changed the how quickly you go into tight aim, how would you teach that to players? How would you I feel like the whole game would have to change, the walk speed would have to change, the distance between cover would have to change to sort of compensate for that. So I don't know how good a job Red Orchestra did with that, and I don't know if the complaints were related only to the speed of that, or if it was a combination of, I draw my weapon up realistically, but none of the other mechanics like sort of support me in that and make it feel like a realistic experience or a balanced game experience.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
It definitely. Yeah, I understand.
Right. So you think it has? Yeah. I mean, from a game standpoint, you think it has to be consistent throughout, from a standpoint of realism versus, because you could the whole game is realistic in a lot of ways, but let's just say changing something like the amount of time that the gun comes up, for instance. You alluded definitely to some spacing issues and maybe walk speed, which makes sense. But isn't it possible to have certain things that are not consistent with that theme, which is realism?
Absolutely. I can respond. My point wasn't that if you have a realistic game that all the mechanics need to be realistic in order for that to work. What I meant was, it kind of goes back to my original statement. If all the mechanics are good and dialed and work with each other well, mm-hmm. the fact that you draw your gun slow is perhaps offset by how quickly you go into crouch or by the cover density. So yes, it takes me a long time to go to bring my gun up, but I don't have to run 30 feet to get to the next piece of cover. Right. So that you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
So that's what I meant by having other parts of the mechanics that maybe offset the difficulty of that, right?
Yeah.
But again, it does go back to if the controls are dialed and they feel good and they're not a hindrance in terms of just being mechanics, then I think you still have a good game. Call of Duty or no.
Right. So since we're talking about shooters, what do you guys think about games that only have deathmatch multiplayer and versus games that only have co-op and or games that have both? I mean, do you think which of those three options do you think is the most ideal from a game developer standpoint right now?
In terms of being able to produce something quickly, it's definitely multiplayer. Like the amount of effort required to have even the dumbest of AI is pretty make no mistake, it's a very difficult thing. And so that's why you see a lot of games that are TDM, DM, maybe CTF or capture point if you're lucky.
Yeah.
It's because it doesn't take as much time. And a lot of these things you can buy in modules. If you use Unreal, that stuff's practically built in for the most part. So that's why you don't see more PvE type stuff in shooters.
I think it's like an investment versus what you actually get out of it, such that the amount of money that you spend building like a campaign in terms of hiring voice actors, hiring graphic design, scripting all the events, maybe even CGI, all of that, mm-hmm. the amount of money you invest into that is so much more. And then, versus the amount of enjoyment that somebody gets when they buy it, the majority of people buy Call of Duty for the multiplayer, which is very easy to throw together. Some might buy it for the campaign, which is comparatively speaking much harder and requires a lot more, capital investment to get that going, I think.
Yeah. You look at any free-to-play game, and they pretty much started out with multiplayer only, and then they got popular, they made money, and bam, now they've got PvE, they've got zombie mode, they've got, they have all these sort of asymmetrical multiplayer modes, and it's all because now they can afford to do that. And the player base is there that will either is bored and needs new game types, or that the player base is there enough to warrant these niche game types.
Yeah, I mean, just given that, what would you say populates the game industry more, multiplayer only or single player based games? Either of you?
Can you say that again? I'm sorry.
Which do you think is more popular right now, single-based games, your single player games, you know, like with storylines and that sort of thing? Or do you think, you know, just multiplayer only type of games?
I don't know. I think it really, like, in terms of shooters?
In terms of shooters. Or
I would say that it's leaning more on multiplayer. You have a lot of successful free-to-play games that are, you know, you've got Team Fortress 2, you've got Blacklight Retribution. You have all these games that are doing really well, or reasonably well, and they're popular. I think even Titanfall is going to be PvP only. There might be a single-player campaign. I'm not sure, but I'd wager that, you know, they're banking heavy on the PvP element. So I see the pendulum swinging that way. But at the same time, you know, that's a really tough question to answer because there's, you know, no one plays just shooters, right? So, yeah, you know, right now everyone's playing The Last of Us, and the big draw for that game is the single player, like, not the multiplayer. It's there, but, you know, a very small percentage of the people that play The Last of Us are going to do the multiplayer.
Seems like whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, it seems like selling the multiplayer aspect is more lucrative, too, because of the ability to monetize, you know, after the sale with map packs and whatnot. Seem a lot more well received than like DLC, which a lot of people seem to be against. So,
well, if you have a good game and you like it and you get your friends playing it, and then all of a sudden everyone's playing it, it's ultimate replayability. You know, as long as there's a small degree of service put into the game. So, you know, even every few months there's a new map or there's a new game mode or just even something simple, like if players love your game, they will keep playing it, and as long as you give them new content, like, and don't screw it up too bad, like, they'll keep playing your game.
Okay, yeah, to get into a more specific topic, because obviously that's pretty vague, it's actually kind of hard to talk about exact characteristics, so let's get into the concept of, I guess, a good game versus a successful game. And one example that I just want to bring up, and especially with folks in our industry, is, you know, we're typically folks that are going to be the hardcores. We're going to like these PC games and probably console games too, right? But you know, one of the things most successful right now in the gaming industry is mobile, right? And a lot of people would probably classify, like in our community, would probably classify a lot of the mobile games as just junk that just sells. So I kind of want to get y'all's opinion about what you guys define as a good game, and whether the complexity of it, you know, when it comes to either like a mobile, like Angry Birds game versus something like Last of Us, plays into what you deem as a good game. Steven, why don't you go first?
I'm not a game developer.
You don't have to be a gamer, though. It's just your opinion, just as a gamer.
It's a really tough question. I mean, I kind of had to deal, not personally, but it's a lot of stuff that I thought about going to school with music, because it's the same thing in terms... It's exactly the same thing in terms
exactly
of music.
Yep.
When you have certain groups that will spend, like, several months putting together a highly sophisticated album that requires, you know, instrumental virtuosos on the guitar, bass, drums, and other things, too. And then they put out an album that sells maybe 10,000-20,000 records, and then you have Justin Bieber put out an album that sells, you know, 50 million or however many triple platinum X-rated 360 no-scope records he puts out.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, like, it's a really hard question to say, like, is it deserved or is it better because it's more popular? I don't know. From my personal opinion, and I'm sure Michael has his own thoughts, obviously, you know, being directly involved with that, I think you have to be really important in terms of, like, targeting your audience. Like, what exactly do you want to do with what you're doing? So, like, for instance, if I were to be doing music professionally, like, I would know exactly what kind of music I want to make and the audience I'm targeting, and as long as I'm making enough for it to be reasonably successful, I would be happy with that. I wouldn't, like, my goal would never be to be the most famous or popular, you know, like Justin Bieber-esque kind of thing in terms of music. So I think it's just important to understand, like, the product you want to make and what your end goal is, and that success isn't necessarily tied with success in your art, if that makes sense.
Right. Michael, what do you think?
I would agree with that to a little bit. you're kind of like saying, what's your favorite album?
Yeah,
In a way, you're saying that, and there's going to be people that are like, well, the White Album's my favorite album.
You as a game designer, though, it's kind of like me. Like, you're going to have a different opinion about it because, you know, the business side of it does play into, I think, what you would deem a good game is, right? Like, obviously, we all have our preferences for what we like, and, of course, just the kind of egotistical side of us are always going to think what we like is good. Being in the game industry, like, you know, for me as a mobile developer, like how popular my game is actually plays into how successful the game is, you know, as a developer, right?
And, well, especially if it's a multiplayer game, like that, that's kind of, it's intrinsically, you can't separate how popular it is with its success.
But does the success play into how good you think the game is as a game developer?
Oh, I don't know. I just kind of like what I like. I like simple mobile games as much as I like sort of indie or XBLA games, mm-hmm. as much as I like blockbusters. And they all have a sort of a different... I approach them all sort of differently. They have different time commitments. They have different times where I can actually play them. You know, maybe I only play stuff on the iPad when I'm traveling because that's the only thing I have when I'm traveling. In my world, you know, I need that variety. I need the Justin Biebers and I need the Dream Theaters, or I need, you know, whatever, all these different facets. Like I've been a professional musician before. I've been playing drums for 25 years and it's the same thing. Like I want all of those to exist and, to be available to me. When I want to listen to Justin Bieber, which may not be very often, but that one day a year where I'm like, you know what, this is totally working for me right now. Like, I'm glad that it's there. And I feel the same with games. I don't play Angry Birds all the time, but when it's there and I can play it, I'm like, this is great.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you. Let's say that, and I haven't played Offensive Comeback before, do you have any kind of like a level up system in that game?
Yeah, players level up based on XP.
Oh, shoot. I'm trying to think of a different example then. Well, I'll use that as an example and try not to let whatever your own personal biases to influence this. But, like, let's say you had an idea for a shooter game and you spent, like, the better part of, like, 2 or 3 years with the dev team making the perfect... And you want it to be, like, a perfectly balanced, even shooter. Everybody starts out... there's no leveling up or anything, and it's just, like, a shooter, and that's what you're going... something Quake, like Quake, okay? Let's say you had... Let's say you have a vision for Quake, and you're the one that makes Quake, Quake 3, Quake Live, whatever people play, and that's, like, your game. And it gets to a point to where it sells enough to, like, sustain itself. Like, you everybody's getting paid, and you've even got, you know, enough money to, you know, start on a sequel. But then there are other games, like Call of Duty or even other FPSs that are doing really well in the face of yours, and you've got a lot of people who are clamoring for, I want a level up system, I want to be able to unlock guns, I really want to level up, and that kind of a thing doesn't necessarily fit in with like your vision of a game. What kind of like personal conflict do you have there in terms of, I know I can do this that would make my game way more successful, but it doesn't really fit in with like how I personally envision my game, and it's just not something that I like. Do you understand like the conflict there? I don't want to use the term selling out, but like, kind of down that road of doing something against your own personal vision, knowing that you could capture a greater audience doing it.
I think that any game designer that says that they don't do that on a regular basis is lying to you.
Of course.
But I think, you know, one of the roles that I play being a lead designer is protecting the user's experience. Right. Okay. And so I understand intimately what the user experience is right now. So I would have to look at that and go, well, I have a bunch of my users saying, we want a level up system. Like, mm-hmm. And then I'd have to go, well, how does this really affect the core experience of the game? Are they still going to be able to run fast, shoot fast? Like, does it affect the balance of the game? Like, does it affect their access to weapons that would maybe make new players not want to play the game because they don't have the cool weapons, right? I think it's a case-by-case basis. I don't think that something like that. I would say that there's a middle ground in there where you could take an idea and incorporate it enough to satisfy the people who want it, but not ruin your game, depending on what the idea is. As long as it's just not totally evasive. Like, well, I think you should have double jumps and everyone should run four times as fast. And how about infinite ammo and everyone has super weapons too, right?
Sure, sure.
Like,
yeah.
If everyone's clamoring for that, then you just make them an extreme game mode. That's a subset of your game modes or whatever. But I don't see that as a bad thing. You know, if you're a designer and you've got this like more of a single player crafted experience, and it's you know, that's a much more those experiences need to be by nature more controlled. Uh-huh. So it's hard for after the fact to go, hey, the publisher or the player base wants this in this experience. Like, it's very I see that being a much more difficult task. How would I work a level up system into a single player game, whereas in a multiplayer game, you know, you could, it's a lot easier, although then you're like, well, do I have to reset everyone now that I add this in?
That's a huge issue when updating
so
games.
But I think it's important to hear your audience, and you know, if they're the ones helping to pay for the game, and it's substantial enough to allow you to make those changes, I don't see why you wouldn't do that. I mean, many like free-to-play strategies are essentially that to some degree, where you make mm-hmm. a game, you don't define it one way or another in terms of game modes. You try to be sort of in the middle. You try to look at what everyone plays, which is TDM, and you kind of skew for that. And then once you get off and running, then you talk to the community and try and sort of steer it in that way, as long as it's not affecting the game negatively.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's funny because definitely my opinions on just this whole topic, good versus successful, it's changed. It's changed since I've gotten into mobile game development. And because, you know, I was definitely, you know, I'm kind of along the same lines as you guys, just, you know, having that parallel with music. And there's some games that just, you know, feed my hunger for, you know, on certain days versus other days, and a variety of games that I like are just fast, right? But I have to say that since I've been developing mobile games, like, my view of things have changed pretty drastically, just because, I don't know about you, Michael, but when I look at mobile games now, I look at them completely different ways. Before, I would just purely look at gameplay, but now it's like the genius of a lot of these games are just the money-making side of it too, right? And how the game, incorporating the game into that is such a huge part. Like Candy Crush, well, right? I mean, Candy Crush is like brilliant on many levels.
Absolutely.
And
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, with mobile, like, you've got a huge player base, right? And you have a very low barrier to entry, which is 99 cents, or even free with a lot of these games. And, as such, all those little mechanics that maybe with a console game you wouldn't worry so much about because someone's already spent $60 on the game and they're not going to just toss it aside, those are really crucial. Like, when I'm navigating the menu, do I get confused? Do I understand what gold coins are? Do I understand how I earn them? Like, the menu, the economy, and the gameplay all have to sort of support each other in a way that's like super intuitive, and like, so even the dumbest of player can just pick this game up and go, this is what this is all about, I love it. And then like, oh, I've played this for 3 hours and now I'm out of coin, I sure I'll spend $5 because I'm hooked, right? That's the whole mentality. So it's really, really crucial for all those systems to just be as unobtrusive as possible and to guide you through the learning experience, and just to kind of hand you this game on a silver platter and still make you feel successful and badass.
Right.
And
right.
So yeah, and so yes, I agree with you. Like looking at mobile games and how they elegantly solve some very complex solutions is a really good way to kind of go back and look at your own game, even a console game or a PC game, and go, how can we do this better? How can we make it easier for players? Because if it's easier for players, then more people will continue to play it, and less people will leave because they won't be frustrated, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the things to talk about too is just that a lot of people for a long time have really concentrated on just graphics, right, and just the engine and that sort of thing. And I think people for a while, you know, got a little bit away just from basic gameplay. And a game like Minecraft comes out, right, and just kind of blows everybody's mind because it's just like terrible graphics, right? Just compared to what we can do nowadays, and you know, becomes a super successful game. What does that say? I mean, what does that say to you guys about maybe just the direction of maybe gaming studios today? I mean, are they a little bit misled, or do you think it's just, you know, there's just enough different niches for everybody, and that just happens to be another niche?
The success of Minecraft tells me that Legos are a classic.
Yeah. Okay.
I also think that it does speak, you know, that game was from the outset like totally accessible to everyone, right? And to some degree the visuals spoke to that, right? They spoke to a sort of a elementary design. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, I've seen kids of all ages play this game and for hours and hours and hours and do nothing but just chip away at rocks. And right. Having done the same as not so young of a person, there's something primal about that. There's something just sort of simple and satisfying to it that I kind of like that I can't explain it too well.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
I kind of liked it with Minecraft. I just have to sit someone down and say, here, just play this for half an hour. Like, and they're probably going to get it, you know, because I don't know how many dozens or hundreds of millions of people have already gotten it. I'm glad that it that Minecraft is the success that it is, because to me, my tagline has always been gameplay is greater than everything else, and I get in a lot of fights, with artists
that's
over that.
Yeah, that's how I am too.
And, you know, there's compromise in anything. And to me, like, Minecraft sort of either purposefully compromised on that or just that was what they did because it made sense. And in order to keep track of all these blocks, that was the best way to do it.
Okay, so how about the last question on this? What do you guys think, or this kind of simplicity that we're talking about with gameplay, do you think there's a level of complexity that needs to be there for it to be an esport? Because, you know, one of the things that I get into discussions with a lot of people are whether certain, like, mobile games are potentially esports. And I generally always disagree with them saying that, no, I don't think they are, even though I am, you know, in the mobile space. But a lot of the reasons that I don't think they are esports that have esports potential is just because they're just not complex enough for the spectators to really appreciate. So what do you guys think about it? Like, Steve,
I think that there is actually a really good video on this, and the guy that does these videos always does it in a really annoying high-pitched voice, and it's a big turn off, but the videos have had good content. I think the general gist of things is complexity is almost always bad and depth is almost always good. What I mean is a lot of complexity that doesn't feel complex, which I guess is kind of like depth, is really good. For instance, take a game like Quake 3, or when you're running on the front like of things, like if you just look at it as a game, it doesn't look like it's very complex, and it's not really complex. Nothing in Quake is very complex, but the depth to the game is such that it can be an esport, and it was. It was played at a very high level. There's a very big divide between an amazing player and a mediocre player. Same thing with League of Legends. If you look at League of Legends, it's not a very complicated game, but the depth that exists between just like the, you can have your character position like 10 pixels in a different spot as opposed to another one that could be the entire difference between first blood and winning the game. You know, like, there's not very much complexity in League of Legends. There's a lot of depth to it, and such that it can be played at a professional level. Complexity is usually something that is universally agreed upon by anybody that's not an asshole to be a bad thing. When you look at games like EVE Online, that's a good example of there being a lot of depth, but a ton of complexity. And typically, the more complexity that's present, the more of a deterrent it is to new players, you know, wanting to pick up your game. I think it's better to have an easily accessible game that provides a lot of depth, such that the complexity is introduced in a way that doesn't confuse people, rather than just right at the offset going, here's this huge fucking set of rules to try to follow and figure out and navigate your way through to make what could probably be an enjoyable game, but so many people are going to be turned off right from the start because the complexity of it is such a deterrent, you know?
Yep. Michael, what do you think?
I would agree with that. I can, depending on the popularity of a complex game, though, like, I can still see it being esports, you know, because it would make for a good spectacle. Like, look how complex this is. Or maybe just the complexity itself does, with a proper team, lend itself to a really good match to watch. But in some ways, I can look at Tiny Wings and go, that's an esport. Like, there's a huge gap between me and the people who are really good at Tiny Wings, and all you have to do is put your button or put your finger on the screen.
Okay.
So, I mean, and that's an example. Like, I don't know if anyone would want to watch that.
Right.
But you know, I guess it kind of, like, what works for esports kind of depends on how you define esports. Is it, you know, is it team play? Is it someone doing hot laps and that's interesting? Like, I don't know, but I agree that simple games, you know, Quake Live, Quake 3 was a great example in that you can kind of pick it up and play it and not. You don't have to bind your weapons. You don't have to know where the quad damage is. You don't have to know this as a player in order to have fun and actually even be competitive at a pub level. Well, I guess now you would, but you know, but the gap between a pub player and a pro player highlights all those. All those things that you would kind of take for granted as a new player, and you'd be like, "Oh, wow, okay, now, you know, maybe I should do that," mm-hmm. Or I didn't realize the game had this depth. I was already having fun, and then oh, now there's another layer to this. So, I agree that complexity for complexity's sake doesn't really help anyone, and certainly doesn't get people to play your game enough to actually have it be viable for esports, because right. You need a lot of people for that.
Definitely. I think one thing to think about too is I can't think of anything ever in the history of whatever that's been a popular athletic event or sport or esport that's been complicated. But I can think of a lot of really simple things that are incredibly popular. Things like, just looking at sports, things like soccer/football, American football, baseball, like every sport is an incredibly simple game. None of the rules are hard to learn. You can learn it in one game, but the depth that exists makes them entertaining to watch, you know? And same thing with esports, same things with board games. Chess is a very simple game. Chess, you could learn chess in 5 minutes. You could learn chess in 1 minute. You know, the pieces all move their way and that's it. But the depth that exists and the amount of strategies makes it, you know, kind of entertaining to watch. Unless there's something I'm missing, I don't know if you know anything, Chairman, I can't think of anything that's been very complex that's been popular as a spectator event.
Yeah.
Curling.
Curling?
Curling? Curling?
I'm kidding. I have no idea.
Yeah. Curling's pretty simple, too, actually.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, I think it's the layers, you know, like you've got this base layer of rules that anyone can get by on.
Definitely.
And then you've got this subset of rules that are adhered to by Olympians and pro players and all that. And that's, you know, that I think that's kind of what you're getting at, is that depth of being able to play it one way or another way, and it's still really the same core activity or core game.
Yeah, but I mean,
StarCraft is not very complicated. StarCraft is very easy. You make people, you mine minerals, you build an army, you kill the enemy. Every unit is different attack. The rules are very easy to learn. It's the depth that comes into the game. I'm sorry, I'm responding to chat right now.
You have to say that StarCraft is probably more complex than another, let's just say, Quake. It's more complex than Quake. Even though, you know, there's more depth to it, too. I mean,
a little bit. I mean, yeah, you could say it's a little bit more complex. But in terms of it being complicated, like, you could learn how to play StarCraft in terms of knowing what all the units do in a day very easily. You could very easily learn it in an hour or two, and you know. But yeah, I would say that StarCraft 2 is probably a little bit more complicated than, like, Quake or a MOBA. Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that when we're talking about esports is accessibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all those sports that you named before that are simple things, the reason they aren't popular is because we either played them ourselves because they're so simple to play, or we just understand it because it's such a simple game. And the mass, you know, the demographic, you're obviously going to have a potential to acquire these people, right, as fans or spectators, if they can understand it. And that's the big challenge we have right now in esports, is really having these games that are easily understandable by the mass demographic, because right now we still rely on everybody playing it. So
that's one of the things that I like. If you listen to, I think it was Dustin Browder, and one of the things they were talking about in making StarCraft 2, they said that one of the hardest things was to tell their graphic artists that they have to chill out on everything, because the graphic artists, you don't want to go crazy in terms of being able to show things like psionic storms or nukes. They wanted, there was a whole lot more that they wanted to do, and you know, Dustin Browder were talking about how they'd constantly have to reel things in, like when you look at a psionic storm, what, like, you have to instantly be able to see it, look that it hurts, and then know it, and then that's it, without getting confused or have all the particle, like all this stuff that's confusing to an observer. And it was really interesting. I wish I had the link to that video, talking about how from the ground up they kind of worked to make the art consistent with an easily accessible, easily observable competitive esport game.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think of that? Like, especially with offensive combat, how does that play into? Because, I think you have some desire to make it a esport, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we just, it does, the game itself absolutely needs to be simple. Like, you know, like you said, when people are watching it, they need to kind of be like, hey, I could do that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I, you know, our game from the outset wasn't designed to be a very complex shooter either. Like, we really tried to keep it as simple as possible while still introducing, you know, unique mechanics. I totally agree with that. And, you know, we're trying to always, when we're thinking about showing things on the screen or showing things in the HUD, you know, we're always doing this thing like, can I look at it? Can I understand it very quickly? Can I get the gist of it? Is this communicating what it's supposed to be? Like, all those things, all those little things really, really mean a lot. And as it goes for StarCraft, it goes for offensive combat too. You know, you definitely need that sort of that elemental communication to go on almost at a subconscious level, in order for people to kind of sink into it, and it needs to be super simple.
Right. I'm kind of just showing offensive combat, right, for those of you that haven't seen it. You go to offensivecombat.com and check out this game. This is the game that is Michael's game, basically. Just wanted to help you promote a little bit while you're on the show, before you take off, right? So as you can tell, like, after you kill people, you can pwn people and do things like
D-bag. You can pwn people?
Yeah, you can D-bag them. And you can
fart on people.
Fart people. That's why it's called offensive combat.
My neighbor was asking me the other day, she's like, what do you make again? Would my kids like it? And her kids are like 12 and 13. I'm like, well, you can fart on people in my game. And she's like, oh, they're going to love it. So I guess I made a shooter for 13-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly. 13 and 30-year-olds.
Absolutely.
But all right, Michael. Well, you know, I know we only had about an hour, you know, scheduled about an hour with you. So thanks for coming on. Actually, let's see if we have any questions. Maybe one question for you. Henry, any questions for from Michael here.
Yeah, there's one question on the Reddit thread from Nuclear Starcraft, and it's a pretty long question, so I'll kind of cut it short. Is as a game developer, is it worth porting a game to Linux or making it from the beginning? Because apparently that scene's like growing now, and it's like almost as popular as Max.
What?
Making games on Linux is more popular than making
Linux
on Mac?
Systems are as popular as Max?
That's what the question says.
Well, assuming it's true for a minute, because I don't know. I really don't know. It's feasible. If there's people there, basically, you go where the money is. It would be, you don't want to fracture your base. You don't want to fracture your dev resources, and then compromise maybe the main game that you're making, which in our case would be PC. I think it's good to do when you can, and it's clear that you should, right? And every dev has a different sort of bar for that, and a different level of what's acceptable for them, and also a different level of involvement in terms of porting it to Linux. If you're making mobile, it could be as easy as hitting a button on the build button that says Linux. I could be oversimplifying that, but just for example, you can get close to that. So whereas with Offensive Combat, we would have to, I don't even know where that would start. Maybe it wouldn't be that big of a deal because we're dealing with browsers, and so
I
don't know, and the ease of that would be better answered by our our lead programmer, but if there was enough people and or it was a super simple thing to do, I don't see why a developer wouldn't do it. Because you're expanding the range of people who can access your game. I'm trying to think if we run on Linux or not. I don't think we do, but I could be wrong.
I would guess you do, given that it's...
Well,
it depends on the plugins, I guess, but I would assume that you would. Because all these browser-based games are supposed to be platform independent, right? And...
Yeah. Well, in our case, we're dependent on how compatible the Unity web player is with Linux versions of browsers, right? So that's what I'm not familiar with now.
That's true. I guess Unity doesn't run on Linux, so that's
then that's our obstacle right there.
Yeah. But you could push a button and make a mobile version.
Yes.
Push a button.
Unity, which is kind of a good example, and it's very easy for you to make a mobile version of a game, iOS or Android, by just checking a couple of different check boxes in the build window, and then clicking build. So that statement was a little bit of an oversimplification, but I'm sure if we can't do that right now, we'll be able to do that soon.
Yeah,
with Linux.
It's definitely getting
it seems that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, porting to... Ooh, I hear myself from somebody. Uh-oh. Is it me? That's not me, right? The ability to port to multiple platforms is getting easier and easier every day. So I think you're right. I think in about a year or two, you're going to be... You're going to be able to port to every single platform pressing a button, but
and then hopefully you're not stretching your marketing budget too thin because you've got to market on these different platforms, and do you have enough manpower to deal with it and manage it?
I've gone through having to use analysis, actually for a while in mobile, we wrote all of our apps on four different platforms. Believe it or not, it was fucking crazy, but. All right, Mike. Well, I'll let you go. Get back to work.
All right.
It's in the middle of your work day.
Thank you.
But,
thanks for
appreciate you coming on, man. Yeah. It's always a pleasure.
My pleasure. No.
Everybody, go check out. Check out offensivecombat.com. Follow Michael at Michael Shore on Twitter, and just play the game. Oh, by the way, Mike, I forgot to tell you. One of the folks that helps me with the audio versions of my show, He said after you appeared on Climb the Ladder, he started playing Office of Combat, and now he's like number one in EU or something at it.
Oh, that's killer. I'm glad to hear that.
yeah, so it's kind of cool. I just figured I'd tell you.
Well, that's cool.
All right, buddy.
All right, thanks again.
Yep, take care. And why don't we take a quick break? We'll take a quick break, guys, and then we'll get all these overlays situated. We'll be right back. All right.
Take care, guys.
All right, later. All right, we are back. And I'm going to close off the show with one more topic, and then we'll do Q&A. But for those of you that haven't asked your questions yet, go ahead and post it in the Reddit thread. I linked it a little earlier. Or tweet it with the #unfiltered on it, and Trio Henry will find it. But let's close off with DreamHack Summer. I was wanting to get... I was going to start off the show with that, but until the NASL news came out, I kind of had to rearrange everything. So yeah, I want to talk a little bit about DreamHack Summer. Did you get a chance to watch any of it, Steven?
Oh, yeah, dude. I watch all of DreamHack.
Fucking A. What do I even ask? But it was a... For those of you who didn't watch it, it was a great event. Lots of storylines, as usual. That's like probably the most consistent thing about DreamHack is there's probably like 10 storylines to talk about. People beating players that were surprising, and some of those being Elfie beat Tasia, TLO beat Squirtle, TLO beat Life,
and
what else?
The final winner.
Yeah, the final winner, Stardust. Stardust was obviously super surprising for folks. Oh, wait, Show beat Life. And I mean, that was probably one of the biggest thing.
Show beating Life was probably, from what I could read, was like the highlight of
everything. Yeah, that was, it was. Like, I mean, the crowd went nuts. There's these awesome pictures of Show. His team or the group that he had around him just mauled him in his booth. I mean, it was like he won at that moment. It was pretty cool to see. But yeah, Show. How about Show, man? He's... You know, he took a year off and came back to StarCraft, and he's been actually playing pretty well, like, lately. But, I mean, I don't think anybody would have guessed he would have beat Life, and in some ways, I think it ranks up there as the biggest upsets ever. So
maybe after TLO beat Life, Life was just so demotivated.
Well, you know, with, at least with ZVZ, you know, there's some level of craziness involved, but TVZ, you know, it's pretty straight up beating Life, who's obviously amazing. So yeah, so congrats to Show for having that run. That was an amazing run for him, and it's pretty cool to see. Pretty cool to see the foreigners being able to beat like these top level Koreans, and ones that aren't even necessarily really deemed that good by most of the community. So it's kind of awesome to see. And then Stardust winning the whole thing. I don't know if you saw Stardust, but he's a Korean player that's on a pretty small team, MYI, and you know he spoke English on all of his interviews. Like he, you know, he wasn't the greatest English, but you know he really opted for trying to speak English during all of them, and the guy's pretty funny, I have to say. He's pretty awesome. Hopefully you can catch some of the VODs if you didn't see it, but his interviews with like In Control and stuff were really, really good. But overall, awesome event as usual. Got over, I don't know, it's probably 120,000 again at some point, just with all the streams in the finals. So Robert Olin, man, he's one lucky bastard because some crazy upsets seem to always happen at his tournaments, and hopefully he keeps, you know, continues with that, and they keep continuing what they're doing. But catch the VODs. I think the VODs are available. The replays aren't out quite yet, but yeah, watch it if you can. And you need to watch. See what games to watch. Watch the Show series for sure. There's one series where the pro it came down to elimination, and It was completely crazy how fortuitous was it? No, it wasn't Show. Sorry, it was God. What match was that? Shit, I'm like forgetting right now. It was Jadong. It was Jadong against Stardust. Was it Jadong against Stardust? I can't remember. It came down. Yeah, the Jadong games. Watch the Jadong semifinal game. It's really, really good. I felt like Nathanius and Apollo casted really well. Nathanius too did an awesome job.
Yeah, actually, I think one of the biggest standouts in this tournament is Nathanius established himself as a good caster. Mm-hmm. A lot of people seem really impressed with his casting.
Yeah, Nathan, I know Nathan really well, so I'm obviously biased with my opinion of it, but I felt like he did an amazing job, and towards the end there, you know, as he was getting more and more comfortable through the weekend, by the last day, like during that particular series, I mean, they were like shouting at one point just because it was so crazy at the end of a particular game. And I just thought it was awesome. Like, we need more of that type of casting in StarCraft. Just more just crazy emotional, almost Korean-style casting in some ways.
But like Day9 style, right?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. You know, that type of stuff. You know, it's nice to have sometimes.
But yeah.
But yeah, Nathanius did great. And hopefully we will see him at more of these, I guess, one-off events, right? Because all these organizations seem to be done hiring, except for NASL. Sounds like they might be still hiring, so...
Do you think I can get a job casting there? Do you think I can do it? You think they'll hire me on?
You never know. NASL? Maybe. MLG? No. Hell no.
But, really? Me and Sundance are so tight, though.
Oh, God. But all right, why don't we do some more questions? Henry, you got some more questions for us from the viewers and Twitter and Reddit?
Sure. This one was meant to be for Michael, but we didn't pick it up before he left. But I'm sure, Chris, you can answer this one since you're an expert in mobile game. What does Michael and everyone think about mobile games cannibalizing each other and like with in crazy numbers with successful models / dynamics? So like Angry Birds, Clash of Clans, and such.
So what do we think of them cannibalizing each other? I guess you mean like a bunch of copies of the same game, I guess, is what you're talking about?
Did somebody say like, Zynga?
Yes, Zynga Games was mentioned.
What, Zynga copying Zynga other...
Like, they're notorious for doing that. You know, it's like a Reddit post like every 6 months about some game that they blatantly, completely, and totally ripped off of, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, there are a lot of core type of game models that you know, people try to do different, you know, different flavors of. For instance, Match 3, right? I think Match 3 was probably made popular by just. I mean, the first game that I remember being Match 3 like was Dr. Mario, I think, way back. And, you know, now, of course, like Bejeweled made it super popular, right? And it's kind of gone a step further now with games like Candy Crush, which is amazingly, amazingly successful. But a lot of these kind of core concepts have kind of developed through the years, and a lot of people have been copying them. And right now, honestly, just given what I know about the mobile industry, that copying these type of models, and there's like probably 10, 20 copies of the same game for every game, probably. It doesn't matter, like, because there's the pie is so huge right now that you can be successful being, like, the fifth best Bejeweled, or being even the 10th best Bejeweled, honestly. You can still be, like, crazy, crazy successful. So, cannibalization, there's probably not that much cannibalization right now, just because, I don't know, people are pretty fickle in the mobile world. They switch games all the time, so the lifespan of the game is really something you can talk about. But you know, you'll see. I mean, I think I looked at tic-tac-toe the other day because I was just playing around with maybe a tic-tac-toe game, and there's like 50 tic-tac-toe games or something, and a lot of them are successful, a lot of them crazy successful. So it's kind of weird. The mobile space is kind of weird that way. Any other questions?
Okay. There's a lot from this person called... Okay, I can't read that, but... what does the future hold for the Superstar Strikers tournament that you held?
Oh, Superstar Strikers, I'm definitely going to be doing another Superstar Strikers, you know, invitational, same kind of format, in July. Because June is just so busy. This weekend is Home Story and that Red Bull thing, and then next weekend is Anaheim. So everybody's just crazy, crazy busy. So sometime in July, either... first weekend or second weekend of July, given what the schedule is. I'll try not to schedule on top of WCS, because not to kill esports again. But, yeah, so it'll probably be something like that, and it'll probably be similar. I'll just try to get more people involved. Overlays will look better. It'll be more professional from the standpoint of marketing. Won't be like last minute like it was. Dude, quit yawning!
I can't help it, man. God, I don't know why. Maybe it's the time of the day, or I'm not tired. Jeez. Like, I have plenty of sleep. I just ate... Fuck, man, I'm sorry, I can't help it.
It's alright.
You should get European style announcers for like your Star Strikers games, like the people that do the announcing on like the World Cup football and whatnot. I think that'd be funny.
Yeah, like that'd be pretty easy to get those guys. I mean,
well, not those guys those exactly, guys. Obviously, but I was saying like casting it in that style would be entertaining.
Yeah, it might be interesting to get a European to help cast it. See if
Also, your call screener guy, I like him, he's doing a great job, but instead of him, you should have got somebody with, like, an Indian accent. So it could be, like, you're offshored it. You're funny. There you go, that's all I got for you.
All right. All right. Henry, you have another question.
Our next question is our StarCraft more important than Team Liquid nowadays?
Oh, shit.
That's a good question.
Let's see. If we Google StarCraft, I wonder what comes up. Got StarCraft 2.
Right, let's see what happens. I'm going to do that.
Neither Reddit nor Team Liquid are page 1. Oh, StarCraft Reddit is top of page 2.
Really?
It's not even there.
Oh, it is.
Where's Team Liquid at? How far down?
Team Liquid's not even on here. Holy smokes, this is crazy.
What about StarCraft?
Wikipedia is on there before. Wait, did we miss it? Let me look at the first page again. Oh my god, man. Sorry, somebody needs to work on the SEO for Team Liquid. Holy shit.
Maybe. Well, I kind of wonder how many users there are on Team Liquid as opposed to the SC subreddit. The StarCraft subreddit also benefits from the fact that it's part of the Reddit community, too. So, you know, you've got the whole intertwining of accounts from people that go to a lot of different...
Oh, sorry. Our screen's messed up. Yeah, that's true. I think Reddit right now... I mean, I look at both, obviously, and... you know, before I didn't. Before I'd look at Team Liquid way more than Reddit. But nowadays, I feel like Reddit is more of the pulse, you know, of just what's going on, just the news that's going to be happening. You're going to see it a lot faster on Reddit just for the sheer fact that you can see 25 items, you know, at one time, just on one page versus Team Liquid, where it's like you can only see like the top 5 in each under.
I still have trouble navigating those fucking Team Liquid forums too. Jesus Christ. They need to, I wish they would just like take a moment to just completely rethink their entire setup for their forums, because it's, maybe I'm just really dumb. But, like, honestly, like, if I have trouble looking at a website, I spend a lot of time on the internet. And if it's, like, if it's even a little bit confusing for me to look at it, like, I can't imagine the average person that just wants to find a Team Liquid fan site to try to navigate the forums. I think it would be a big pain in the ass. So, I don't know if Team Liquid is ever going to redo the way that they do forums. But, like, another thing you have to consider, too, is if there is anything big on Team Liquid, it's always going to be on Reddit, too.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Whereas something big on Reddit might not make the posting guidelines or something of Team Liquid, or that maybe somebody's banned. So it's like, I don't know.
That's true. That's true. Team Liquid nowadays is a subset of Reddit. So
it's also nice because on the StarCraft subreddit, if somebody important made a post, usually it's upvoted to the top, you know, circle jerk or whatever you want to call it. But like, for instance, like if that same Reddit post was made about NASL picking up. I was able to see the post about NASL picking up the WCS. I click it, and the first response is Total Biscuit. If that was a Team Liquid site, I don't know how many pages I would have to go through to find something. You know, hopefully the op edits his post, but if he doesn't, then you're like fucked. You know.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. It's definitely way, way better in that regard. I hate having to, read through every single comment sometimes, especially when I get there late. It's like, oh my god, there's like fucking 10 pages of comments to look through. Alright, Henry, what's next?
Alright, player pools at LAN events is noticeably weaker in 2013 than in 2012. He's asking, is the era of weakened tournaments over with WCS and Pro League in play? I know, Chris, you have some views on this.
Oh, I don't think they're that bad. I mean, DreamHack was pretty darn good, right? Don't you think?
Is he talking about smaller tournaments like Zeke and whatnot, or is he talking about...
Yeah, you're talking about big... I'm talking about
like LANs, like maybe MLG and DreamHacks. Like the player pool's smaller. Like that's... I'm pretty sure about that.
In terms of the variety of players going to events?
Well, I mean, with like MLG cutting out open bracket and like... a lot of these things, the player pool is smaller and there's less new players coming up.
I feel like there's been a lot of new players kind of popping up lately, you know, with the WCS, right? I mean, we're seeing like Drunken Boy and all those guys, right, starting to appear, but at these LANs, MLG's 128 players. I mean, that's quite a few, I think, and given that there's not a ton, like a crazy, crazy number of Koreans. I mean, there's a good number, but not crazy that I feel like it's a pretty good mix. I don't know. I don't actually see it as being too big of a problem right now, just given that WCS is trying to fill in that void. And, you know, we're starting to see some Shadowcraft Americas. We'll see more. I think we'll see more in the coming months, just smaller tournaments that actually have some notable prize money, I'm hoping. Hoping we'll see like another Lone Star Clash and some SoCal kind of tournament soon, but
that's an interesting thing that somebody brought up too. Now with StarCraft being kind of an older game, you have to wonder how much new blood is flowing into the scene, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, are there any pro gamers that are going to be winning in 1 year that are going to start today? Would you really want to start playing StarCraft today if you wanted to play it professionally?
Would you want to start playing? I mean, a lot of people. I mean, do a lot of people really just start playing the game all of a sudden, just to be, like in hopes of being a professional versus somebody? Most people have already been playing the game for a while, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Probably not. I mean, it's a daunting task. Even if there were facilities to get there, it's a daunting task, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it changes it that so much, but it's just the players that are already in it are, you know, just helping those people get to it, right?
Yeah.
Henry, jump in with a question.
So for a follow up, what do you guys think about like the league play for WCS and Pro League compared to the weekend tournaments then?
I've never been a huge fan of the weekday type of league content. League meaning like WCS League and Pro League and that kind of thing. The main reason it's great. It's cool seeing all the players playing, and you know, there is something of value that they're playing for every single time, but it doesn't have the feel of just like DreamHack this weekend. You know, this kind of 2-day, 3-day, just tournament that somebody's going to win a giant prize at, and you know, every single match you play can be life or death for you. That type of excitement is for me is a lot of what StarCraft esports is about, and you know, so MLGs and DreamHacks are kind of, I don't know, for me it's kind of imprinted in me that's that way, and the whole league stuff is. For me, it's been more about just like a business kind of thing where leagues, you can have content every day, right? So these people can obviously make ad revenue and that sort of thing every day. It's more about just the amount of content. So I don't know. What do you think, Steven?
I don't know. I feel like it should have been more popular. I don't know why league play never really caught on much. Maybe it's just the way that it was managed was really poorly, or it wasn't hyped well enough, or I don't know. I always felt like league play, like, a lot of people would catch on towards the end when they're like, okay, well, who are, like, the top four teams? But, like, the actual league play itself never seemed to be that popular. I would have to think a long time, like, how does LCS, how do they make it so much better? Maybe it's just because of the amount of money being played for, so the teams are better, but I don't know.
Well, LCS is a little bit different because the games themselves are really long, too. So having it encompassed in a weekend is pretty crazy and hard, you know, in some ways, if you're going to talk about like a large tournament. So it's different with League, but you know, even with League, I mean, that All-Star event was awesome, right?
Sure.
That was in China, and if we had more of those type of events, I mean, I think you could have a similar feel too, but you know, it's hard to compare because there's nothing else to compare it with right now.
Yeah, yeah.
With League, I mean, LCS is all there is for the most part, but with StarCraft, yeah, I just think that for me, it's just more exciting. I mean, if we had DreamHacks every weekend or every other weekend, would I still feel the same? I don't know. Maybe not. But right now, just given the amount that there is, it's just, you know, it's pretty awesome having these weekend events that I can just kind of power through in 3 days. You know, like, I can set off this weekend and just like, hey, you know, I'm not going to get much sleep this weekend because I know I'm watching this event, you know, versus this league that I can just kind of wait until it plays itself out in the end in the playoffs. It's like baseball. You know, baseball's, unless I'm playing fantasy baseball, it's kind of boring as hell to kind of watch every day. So I just wait until, like, the playoffs and the World Series where we're actually paying attention, you know? It's kind of that similar feel to this. And, yeah, so.
All right. And, Steven, how do you feel about being picked up by STXO?
I'm very excited. I look forward to my training with them. Hopefully I can put some good results out and please my fans.
What do you guys think about Major being teamless again?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about
that. Oh, that sucks.
Why? Why is it?
Because he got kicked off. He wasn't good enough.
Yeah, but you see any silver linings to it? Or no?
No, that sucks. It's terrible. There's no silver lining there. It was always his dream to play for a Kespa team, and he got the boot because he wasn't good enough. What could possibly be a silver lining? It sucks. I feel really bad for him. Hopefully he can. I mean, if he continues to play, hopefully it doesn't affect his mentality or anything too much, and he can find himself on a different team or something like that. It would be really hard, though, for Major, for any foreign team to pick him up, because he's going to want to go back to a Korean team ASAP, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely wants to be there. There's no doubt about it. But I don't know. I feel like with WCS the way it is right now, that, you know, he talked about coming back for it.
Sure.
When it first came up, it was like almost a no brainer. He was coming back.
Yeah. Didn't he win Major One WCS Mexico? Didn't he?
Oh yeah, yeah. Like the previous year, but he didn't do well in WCS this year. But I think he could. He should absolutely. His skill is definitely high enough that he should be kicking ass in WCS NA. So I don't know. I mean, I know it's his dream to definitely play on a Korean team, but I could see still some good things happening for him. It's gotten to the point where at least a foreign team would pick him up, right? More so than like a year and a half ago, maybe with some of the team drama he's had in the past. But
sure,
Henry. Next question.
That's one more. What do you guys think about graphics in games and how it affects esports?
Oh. I don't know.
I think graphics are really, 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 really important. And that's one of my biggest critiques in that Dota 2 and League get like a half in. Like, it's really easy with StarCraft to look at StarCraft and to know what's going on, you know? When a Marine dies, the blood appears, he's dead. When you see shots coming out of something, you know it hurts.
Yeah.
You know Siege Tank's shots splash. When you see a Siege Tank fire, you know it's splash damage, you know? I think that for the most part, the StarCraft 2 graphics are very on point in terms of seeing what things do. The time warp bubble, even, from the, from that shit, you could tell what's going on. Everything is, like, really, really, really nice in terms of that. When you look at games like League of Legends and Dota 2, it is fucking impossible to know what the fuck is going on. I don't know what anything is doing ever. Like, I know with League, because I play the game, but if you didn't play League, you'd have no fucking idea what's going on ever. You look at Dota 2, you have no idea what's going on. One thing that I would like to see, and I've actually talked to a couple guys that write about it, I don't know if they'll ever do it, though, and they, you know, it's always like, oh, that's an interesting idea, is I've always wondered, what they should have, like, an Observer UI that has a consistent color scheme for everything. You know, Dota 2 and League should both do it, where, like, and they could have their own graphics for if you're playing, and that's fine, but for the Observer UI, then all you do is you make it so that offensive spells are red, heals are green, and, like, CC is blue, or something like that, you know? Yeah. Every spell should be like that. So, like, because, like, right now, if you, like, taking League, for example, like, Sona alts, I don't know what the fuck that is. It's like the little, like that little wave appears. Like, I don't know intuitively, like, did it do damage? Is it a stun? Like, I'm not actually sure. I see everybody stun afterwards, so I kind of know it. If you look at Karma's chains that are, like, blue, like, what is that? Like, is it a heal, or is it, like, I don't understand. You know, like, there's a lot of things, like, Ezreal's W speeds his allies up. Like, I would have no idea just looking at that. They really need to work on the intuitiveness of the graphics tying in with the gameplay, because right now it's abysmal at how terribly horrible it is to look at a game of at any MOBA to try to figure out what's going on by just looking. You can't do it. Whereas with StarCraft 2, you could know jack shit about it, and you would know instantly, like, everything that's going on. Like, you could tell, like I said, like, you look at a storm, you know what's going on. You look at a storm shooting something, very easy. Everything is very easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny you mentioned the Siege Tank, because I think the Siege Tank is probably, it's probably the only thing that's Splash right now that doesn't animate in the form of, like, a projectile or a, you know, just a, you know, like, the only thing that you see is just kind of blood splatting off people, right? Like, that's probably the one thing that isn't, like, super, super obvious. But everything else is, like, even Fungal right now is, like, right, you can see a projectile fly from it and everything. Sure. And I totally agree with all those points. Yeah, yeah. I definitely agree with all those points. With the League, your comments on League, I get the utility of making everything, like, kind of the color schemes, but I think it would take away the uniqueness of the characters, right? I mean, that's kind
of the... Yeah, but you can't sacrifice the uniqueness for... You can still have the same particle effects. I mean, just try to keep the colors consistent. Like, you've got to strike a balance between the uniqueness and the art and the functionality of everything. Because functionally, like, it's just it's impossible to look at any League or Dota 2 teamfight and have any fucking idea what's going on, you know? Because everything is different colors. Like, I've played a fair bit of League now. Like, I'm fairly good at League, and looking at Dota 2, I have no fucking idea what's going on at all. Like, I might be able to guess if I, like, sit and analyze a fight several times. But this is somebody with a lot of experience in League, and I can't figure out, like, there's something wrong with that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of units too to have to like explain. You know, like how many times in a StarCraft II battle do you have 10 different characters all, you know, different types of characters all fighting at once?
Sure.
I mean, there's usually like 6, you know, or 7 or something like that. It's not, and they all don't have crazy like 4 individual powers too.
But that's the nice thing about having a consistent graphics scheme. You know, like if you see somebody running away, for instance, like I see somebody running away, okay? And as they're running, I see Graves launch his R, which is an attack, Ezreal launch his Q, and Orianna launch her ball to attack. And I see all of that. And I see it, and even one of them hits, and it's like, wow, those were all red, it was just damage, the guy got away, you know, okay, whatever. And I understand exactly what happened there. Whereas, let's say it's something like, I see Jarvan, like, EQ, and I see, and then I see Graves R and an Orianna attack, and I see the EQ barely missed, but he glows green or something, or blue when he does the EQ, and then I realize, like, holy fuck, like, if he would have landed that EQ, that would have been huge, because I see the color is, it was some kind of CC, maybe a knockup, maybe a stun, you know, like, the audience gets so much more out of seeing what exactly it is, so then when the entire audience is going, whoa, shit, you know, like, because, oh my god, he just narrowly avoided that CC, somebody who doesn't necessarily play the game all the time can look and see, you know, just graphically identify that, oh wow, if that would have hit, he would have been CC'd, and that probably would have been a kill, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can see that. It would definitely help with the accessibility of it for sure.
Yeah, and like I said, even if it was just like an observer UI, like you don't have to change the entire game's graphics like a single player. Yeah. But if they just had an observer UI that looked like that, I feel like it would be sick that anybody could look at the game and go like, oh, cool. Like I know, like somebody comes in for a gank and they turn on and then they turn green and you see like Morgana's shield at the same time. It's like, oh my god, like that shield wasn't sick because she shielded, but it was sick because she shielded, and then the guy turned green or whatever, but it didn't do anything because she shielded. So, like, I understand now why everybody is cheering or happy or whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it could just be a filter. That's true. Yeah, I mean, you could choose to use it or not, right?
Yeah.
Sounds like an interesting idea to me. Henry? Henry, are you there?
Henry died.
Yeah. I think that's it for today.
That's it for the questions? Okay, all right. Make sure, let me... one last refresh, and then we'll, I guess we'll call it a day. Call it a night. Let's see. All right, well, I think that's it, guys. Did a pretty good show, Steven. Good stuff.
Yeah, man. Good job. So fucking proud of you.
Oh, shit, man. I saw your blog. Oh, actually, we should probably bring it. I saw your blog, and you listed all those machines you built.
What? I listed all the machines I built?
Did you? I thought you listed a bunch of machines that you... Or just the
specs. I think it was just specs on my computer.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you like it?
It's fine. I mean, I've been using it.
I mean, you said your H220 died again, right?
Yeah, I don't know about that, but... If this one dies, I'm probably just going to fucking buy an H100i or some shit. I'm pretty disappointed. This is my RMA, and it died completely a few days ago. I was trying to play games with Aaron,
shit.
And my computer was laggy as fuck, and I had no idea why. And so I checked the temperatures on the off chance that my processor was being throttled, and I see that my temps are all hovering at around, like, 91 degrees. And it's like, oh, okay, well, this shit is fucked. So I sat there trying to troubleshoot for, like, an hour. Finally, I turned my computer back on. I underclocked the processor so that it would try to generate as little heat as possible. And then in the middle of nowhere, when I'm just, like, reading forums, I'm idling at, like, 65 degrees. All of a sudden, bam, it just turns back on out of nowhere. It just turns back on out of absolutely nowhere. Nothing changed. And now it's still on, so I have no idea.
Oh, man. Not a power issue, right?
No, what? No way. I got, like, an 850 watt and only one GPU. I have plenty of power.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I don't know.
Cool. But, might have to have you build me one of these days, dude.
I'll do it, dude. Oh, so
give me a discount? Give me a discount?
Possibly. Yeah, you get. I'll charge you 14% instead of 15%. It's like my girl discount.
Girl discount. Thanks, man.
Speaking of girls and discounts, no discounts, but I'm going through a computer build coming up where there's a girl who is trying to get into streaming, or she wants a computer that can do streaming and games, and she went through me to order the parts, but she wants to build it herself, so I'll be walking her through that build via Skype.
I thought you already did this. You haven't done this yet? Oh, I thought you'd done this.
Because we're still finalizing parts and whatnot, so that'll be fun.
Okay.
And I'm putting, hopefully, my goal is that she puts hers together at the same time I put this one together. The parts are starting to come in. Look, I get to do my first Haswell build. How cool is that? I've never worked with one of these before.
Oh, yeah? Okay. That should be cool.
I guess.
Yeah, let me know how that goes, man. If it's easy. If it's easy or not. But, all right, good deal. So, why don't we close out the show? Henry, it was great having you on, bud. We'll try to have you on every week. Get us going. I mean, it's kind of the first week of doing this, so we'll iron things out, have it go a little bit quicker.
Did we talk about Idra playing Terran?
Oh, we haven't talked about that yet. I haven't actually watched it. Has anybody watched it? Henry, you watched it?
Idra plays Terran.
A little bit. He's just learning all the other races now since he's not playing competitively anymore.
Yeah, we talked about it, right? We talked about how it would be probably amazing for him to stream himself learning Terran in particular, given that he played Terran in Brood War. It's a good idea. It'd be cool if he's commentating a lot as to like some of the cool nuances instead of just building Hellbats all day.
That's fine.
Yeah. But all right, Henry, you want to do shout-outs real quick?
My shout-outs are to you, Chairman, and Mr. Destiny over here. Thank you for having me on. I'll try and improve on what I've been doing.
Cool.
That's it.
I love you.
This is Steven. Shout-outs? Anybody?
Shout-out to Phoenix for their shit. Phoenix should be having a keyboard coming out soon, which will be fun. Finally get off these fucking brown keys, or these fucking red keys to switch to browns, okay. Which will be fun.
It's quiet.
Shout out to Brandon Crack. What's his last name?
Brandon Crack.
Oh yeah, it is Crack. Brandon Crack. He's the guy that does the CRT League, which hopefully we'll be playing in this weekend. We should be playing in this weekend, the online tournament, nice. CRTLeague.com. It'll be fun. And shout out to Chan Man's mother for giving birth to a wonderfully productive Asian man.
Hell yeah, Mama Chan. Shout outs for me. The two of you guys, Henry, of course, for hopping on for the first time. Henry helps me out with a lot of stuff show-wise for a long time now, so he's kind of been behind the scenes, just the mod behind the scenes guys. And Steven, of course, for doing this with me every week, always fun. And all of you guys that had questions about last week, I know last week that was crazy, okay? So, but we're still going to do that. We're going to try it again one of these days. But I'm going to give you guys notice so that a lot of you guys can write in questions. And, we won't have only, three to choose from, and one of them with the fucking voice modifier the whole time. So I'll let you guys know when we do that so that, again, all of you guys that were saying, oh, my God, these question askers suck and all this stuff, that you guys can actually do something about it. But check out the VODs on youtube.com/ChanManV. I have audio versions too that I usually list in the Reddit threads that I post once the VODs are up, so kind of check that out too. I'm trying to get an RSS feed to give you guys, but I've just been taking longer than it should. And next week I think we'll be doing this again, right, Steven?
Yeah, sure.
Alright, cool. Next week we'll be on again, and Wednesday night sprites, tomorrow night Thursday we got Climb the Ladder with Red Eye's going to be our guest, so we'll just probably just talking about general things with Red Eye, just because we haven't had him on in a while. But until then, it's ChanManV, Destiny, and Trio. See you next week. Later. Sure.
Destiny makes us better.